And we are back for another part train. Guys, I know we say this every time, but, you know, I'm just telling the truth. This interview is a fantastic one. Okay, Strat and Cermak aren't here this week. It's just myself and Akbar Chisti, the founder of Seamus Golf. And this interview is a really unique one because I don't think I could say this about any other interview we've ever done. Whether you're a golf nut like us, or you accidentally tapped our icon in the podcast app and actually hate golf, I think all of you will actually learn something really valuable from this interview, and you'll just simply enjoy the great conversation. So, Seamus Golf is known for their authentic head covers, their copper steel ball marks, etc., all inspired by what you used to see in Scotland back when the game was invented. They're one of my favorite companies out there, not just in golf, but they're so much more than just a golf accessories company. I took a tour of their design center and their company in Portland, Oregon a couple months ago. I sat down with Akbar face to face. They are just the perfect example of not caring what a business book says to do. They focused on what they thought was cool, and they're doing things that nobody else in golf are doing. So we'll cover things like a must-listen Matt Kuchar Ryder Cup story. We talk a lot about Bannon Dunes. He's caddied there. He plays in the Summer Solstice event every year. They actually made history with goat caddies, how to break into the golf industry, advice on how to start your own business, and just a lot of heartfelt stories in between. So buckle up, enjoy. Let's just dive right in.
And we're back for another part train. Akbar, thanks so much for coming on the show. I'm excited to continue the conversation we had in person about a month ago.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. It's pretty cool. You guys are into the stuff that we do, man. That's flattering. Very cool. Thank you.
Of course, yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about it before we started recording. I was thinking about how to introduce Seamus for those that maybe aren't familiar with it. And even calling you the best accessories company in golf, I think, does you a disservice. I think you guys are more than just accessories and head covers. To me, you guys are about bringing back the essence of the game that we love from when it was created back in Scotland, right? And I think there's something very unique about you guys where you're giving us all a chance to own a small piece of that and serve as our own personal expression. So we're excited to have you on.
That is deep. And honestly, like, it wasn't really our original intentions to try to have such a big impact. I think that, like, what's happened is, like, people have gotten into what we do and supported it and allowed it to grow that way. And, you know, there's a chance that we might be able to influence a lot of people into, you know, playing the game the way it used to be. And as it turns out, I think there's a lot of things about the way the game originally was played that are very modern and hip. You know, people weren't so serious about it. I mean, You have to think about it. I mean, they were literally just taking a handful of hickory clubs and just hitting balls, you know, probably toting their sheep around, playing quickly. They were walking. They were on generally pretty rugged links land terrain, right?
Yep.
And that whole thing, that whole experience of playing like that, truly is like what it's all about. And what's funny is now we're just talking about playing links golf and walking and, you know, people who play quick and people who aren't that serious. And it's really just going right back to where it was to begin with, you know, not the carts, the 6 hour rounds, the, you know, stuff like that, that I think people have grown to believe that's what golf is, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I'd love for you to get into it. And I've got questions, to give people more context of how Seamus started. But before we get into it, I always like starting off with a fun question. We actually asked this to your guy, Eric Lang. We had him on a few months ago, and this was one of my favorite questions asked. So you go to an iconic course, right, and you always want to get a few souvenirs in the pro shop. So since you make a lot of these items, I'm curious to know, what are your top three items to get at a course? I'll give you mine to start, to give you context, and give you a second to think about it. So mine is ball marker, number one. Because I love being able to have really authentic ball marks that I can use throughout my rounds to remind me of a place I've been. Number two is the hat. You can wear it anywhere. And three is the quarter zip. So those are my top three. Eric's was actually a belt. His number one was a belt, which I was surprised by. But
oh, I've seen him buy belts. I've had to buy belts for him when he forgot his wallet. I know about his belt thing.
Yeah, he loves it. So what's your top three?
I've always been kind of a bigger dude, and I know that this is not the direction of the question, but I usually don't fit in a lot of the clothes that are in the golf shop. Uh-huh. So when I'd go in, or I just didn't really like a lot of the clothes. Like, I wouldn't think of a polo to take because, like, you know, I didn't always want to wear a logo polo all the time.
Yep.
Because it wasn't always fitting for, like, if you wanted to play golf and go have dinner with the family or whatever. It's just like the logo's still there. So I've always been really into like accessories, and like it's strange to say, but like I was always like looking at head covers. Hmm. Like I had a wolf head cover growing up. I had a Superman head cover growing up. I had like a million different head covers, and I was always changing them when I went and played. So it's not as surprising there. And then, you know, I would buy like a lot of divot tools, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It sounds weird. Like, I was really into head covers and divot tools. And then I almost always bought a windbreaker because I was like, I could use that a lot. And, you know, those are my three things, I would say.
Okay. Just digging that gird and covering the driver. I love it.
Yeah.
Speaking of, you know, accessories, I was amazed by what you guys did. It was probably a few weeks ago. With the web.com and web.com players getting their PGA Tour cards. And I just wanted to know, when someone gets a PGA Tour card, your dream is now being realized of playing on the PGA Tour. But you guys came in and you custom stamped, was it copper?
Yes, copper and mild steel.
Okay.
And then we assembled them by the 18th green at this recent tournament at Pumpkin Ridge.
And what was it like handing someone their dream? With the product you
well,
make.
Well, it was pretty cool. I didn't personally hand it to them, but they all came up and took pictures and were wanting to hold it while I was making them. And that was really cool. I mean, it was one of these things where I was out at that tournament about 3 years ago watching a buddy play in it. And I saw the cards they were handing out, and they were reminiscent of like a hotel room card. And I was like,
right.
These people, like, this isn't like graduating. It's not like from high school or college. Because like in both those cases, I was like, get me out of here. I don't want to be here anymore, you know? But, like, if you think about trying to get your PGA Tour card, it's an aspiration that starts at a pretty young age.
Yeah.
And I think you kind of work harder for that than really anything else. I mean, I don't know anything I've worked as hard as to get than these guys on tour, right? I mean, these guys are traveling and trying to play golf for money. And so I went to the guy who's directing that tournament. I was like, dude, let me just come and do something. I have an idea. Let's do, like, let's like just blow this thing up and let's do something that's so special for these guys that work so hard. And the concept was to just be like, kind of bring what you have at like the Open Championship where they're like engraving, you know, as they go on the 18th green. Well, that's the inspiration. And how it translated was to have like me stamping there. And I didn't know how serious it would get on TV, but that was like pretty nerve-wracking, but somehow we did it without screwing up any of the names. So
yeah, I mean, that's got to be something that they cherish for the rest of their life, so that's got to be cool to be a part of.
I would hope so. Yeah, that's the goal.
So speaking of dreams, I know you always wanted to own your own company, and you started in accounting, so this is quite the departure from crunching numbers to custom stamping golf accessories. But I know you've told this story before. We don't usually like to ask too many questions that are out there already, but I feel like we've got to give the listeners the backstory of how you started Seamus and maybe inspire a couple folks to start something of their own.
The way it started, it was funny you mentioned the Kaisers. I grew up in college caddying at Bannon Dunes and working in their shop.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys that I met was Michael. I didn't know who he was, and we just hung out and caddied and played golf and stuff and ate frozen pizzas, and turned out it was Mike Kaiser Jr. We became good buddies then, and then just kind of kept in touch. But also in that process, I learned, you know, got to be buddies with their buyer there. And so years went by. I kind of forgot about this time where I like really loved being in that space of golf and wanted to do something in that space of golf, and went to pursue my accounting degree and do some cool auditing things. And then what happened was I had like a tartan head cover my dad brought me from Royal Troon. and it started falling apart. And this is where my wife comes into the equation. She was a designer at Pendleton Woolmill, and she did apparel design, and she also knew how to sew. So she went in and took one of my old work socks and stitched it to the bottom. And I was like, this is cool. And in the process, she's like, I could kind of make a cooler looking one, you know, let's like look at doing a better design. And so I was like, always liked the barrel style, but like a lot of tartan head covers weren't like fun. And so what we did then was added a pop color lining and an old elastic band. And eventually it was something that really had a couple of characteristics that were unique. And all the while I was just distributing them to my buddies and saying, what do you think? What do you think? Before we knew it, one of my buddies was the buyer at BNN, and she really liked it, Amy Pendergast. And she's like, this is really cool. And she didn't buy it right away. She was like, this is cool. It kind of hung out there. And I was like, we should see if we could sell these over there. So then we figured out how to put a logo on there. And Bandon Dunes was our first account.
That's a pretty great first account to get.
Yeah, because I love that place. Yeah. And I mean, it's just the best. And it's what it's all about. And so after that, I went to, I think, the 2012 PGA show with a backpack full of head covers and showed them to basically everybody I saw, whether they were on the showroom floor or in the restroom, you know, just kind of hustling. I didn't have a booth at the time. The current director of Jones Golf Bags had a booth for, he was slinging wedges at the time, Chris Carnahan. So he's like, hey, just come on over and you can just put your stuff in there and sell. It'll give me something to do. We can hang out. It'll be fun. And I was like, great, let's do this. And so, you know, he let me sit in his booth then. Then he went over to Jones Golf Bags, and he's like, just come sell stuff out of the booth. Because, I mean, the big difference here is we're totally homegrown. And, like, while Megan was back home kind of filling orders, and overseeing our operations, which was out of our house, I was out there selling stuff. So we continued to be in our house for a couple of years. And then, you know, there's a lot of details in here. I'm trying to figure out how to, like, I could probably tell this story over the course of, like, 5 hours and 3 bourbons or something like that. But like, so then we get to the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, and like, there's only like 2 or 3 goals I had at that time. One was to be in the U.S. Open, 2 was to be at the Masters, and 3 was to be at the Ryder Cup. And I knew that if we did those things, that everything else would work out. So I started out with the U.S. Open, and I went to meet with them at the Vegas PGA show, took an anvil and said, hey, like, what do you think of this idea? At the time, we just started playing around with designing some metal accessories. So those were all like handcrafted. They were made by a local blacksmith, and I grew really affectionate to his design and aesthetic because he was making it the same way that folks used to make hickory clubs, and the hickory heads were all hand forged. And it just made so much sense to make these really nice, small accessories that, like, were, because, like, I always collected those little things, and I felt like, why don't we make this out of some nice materials and do it handmade if I'm going to be using it so much? The price was ridiculous. Like, I didn't think that the price would work, and my wife, Megan, was, like, encouraging, like, you know what? If you want it and you don't care, like, then we don't care how many we sell. Let's just do what we do because we like it. It's a lot easier that way.
Yeah.
We launched the hand-forged ball mark at the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay. And that was in conjunction with the rest of our line. And we drew a partnership for that with Pendleton Wool Mills. So we did a Pendleton line of head covers, and we did our hand-forged stuff. And I think that somewhere in and around there, I mean, we had a couple of good press pieces from Marty Hackle at Golf Digest, and you know, the Kaisers continued to support us, so they opened up Cabot Links, and so we had a good spread over there. You know, it's funny. I mean, it's like we have this whole thing where we're in all these great golf shops, but, like, we're not in all the golf shops. But, you know, we're now in the places that we want to be, and in each shop that we've been into, we've really embraced the culture there, and we've picked up, you know, since then, I think those 3 goals have happened, which was the Masters and getting to do things for the Ryder Cup team.
That's awesome. Well, I've got 2 things to say to that. One, we joked about this when we met a month ago, but I've since regretted not spending $40 on a ball marker at Bandon. So to all you golfers out there, if you're at the golf shop and you're like, this is a little bit more than I was planning to spend on a ball marker or bag tag or whatever, I'm telling you, you will regret it because it's far better than anything else you're going to spend $15 or $20 on. So just do it. That's one. Two is, it's funny that you mentioned that you started with your wife, because I have friends that legitimately put generic head covers on their driver so that the wife doesn't see that they bought a new club again. And the fact that your wife was just voluntarily creating golf accessories for you starting out sounds like the dream. So bravo to you. It sounds like you made a great choice.
Well, yeah, I mean, she voluntarily fixed my head cover, but there was some encouragement on like turning this into a business. I think that she wasn't entirely sold on it, but the second we got the order from Bandon, it was not a ridiculous amount of head covers, but she put in her 2 weeks and I was like, damn. And so because we need to sell a lot more head covers now,
yeah,
to make this work. But she was incredibly into it when she thought of the idea of being able to quit her job and start a business. So then I had to continue working two jobs and run Seamus. So there was a little period where she wasn't totally into it, but once it started going, she was like, this is cool. So
it feels like only within the last 3 to 5 years that the golf bag has become more of a unique expression of the golfer. It could be personal bias, but I never really remember seeing guys that I'd play with and around the course with more classic bags, classic head covers, customized stuff. It was all like the major OEMs, right? The stock head covers you get at the golf shop. What do you think has changed?
I attribute our brand to the invention of Bandon Dunes. Like, we're all about modern stuff, but we have a huge appreciation for what happened in the past and what brought us here. I think that there's really nowhere to look but the Kaisers who started this movement in North America to appreciate links golf and architectural golf and on a broader scope. Because people had a chance to go play these places, like see what it was like. And now they're like, I want to be more like that all the time. And they go back to the clubs and they're like, extremely watered fairies, lots of trees, and you know, it's, there's no view of the ocean all of a sudden or whatever. And they're like, how do I like continue this passion for that golf when I'm not there? And I think that's what's happened. You know, there could be other way more influencing factors that have created this movement, because it's inspired so many people, like people to start their own brands, people to walk and play golf and to accessorize in these ways, you know?
Yeah. I mean, looking at my bag now, I literally just got my first Jones golf bag with a custom Park Train logo. I've got Seamus golf ball markers. I've got True Links shoes. I mean, it's just funny how, you know, before going with a no-name brand in golf was kind of looked down upon, or, you know, you're not as elite of a player or whatever. But I think that's changing, and I think it's better for the game.
I like to think so too, you know? I mean, I think it'll change the way people see it. And I like that, like, alternative golf options are coming up, like these cool par threes and things. And the punch bowl putting green wasn't invented with the one at Bandon Dunes. It was invented, like, you know, 100 years ago when they built it at St. Andrews for kids and, like, people who wanted to learn to play golf to practice putting on. And now that's going on everywhere. So what are you doing there? You're making it more accessible to people to learn to play, you know, and having this public philosophy. It's like, there's a lot of great things that are happening in the game. And I think it's going to be nice to see people kind of transition into this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. And what is it about Oregon? Cause I just went for the first time last month. What is it about Oregon that is now the hotbed for authentic, high quality golf gear / experiences?
Let's see here. Who all is here? We got us, we got Jones, there's McKenzie, there's Nike Golf, which is making a huge moves and strides to do some things better. And I think who else is out there? We got Click Gear. I don't know if that counts, but that's cool stuff too. I think, and way back, you know, there was people tinkering around here. I mean, there was a golf bag company that invented the integrated rain hood called McMoney's in like the early 1900s. Like, any rain hood that you see that's affixed to a golf bag was invented in Oregon. I think that's where we get to start with the answer, because we got nothing to do in the winter, man. It's raining, and because all we can do is think about golf. So it's like you can't play. I think maybe that's part of it, but also it's kind of a maker community. I mean, not all of these brands that we've talked about are making stuff here, but like, it's been a hotbed for craft in general. And so when you have golfers there in that mix, I think maybe that's it. I don't know.
Well, you brought up Bandon. I was going to talk about it later, but because you brought it up, I think it's fun for you to talk about, because you've worked there and obviously you've lived there, and I'm pretty sure you've played in the summer solstice every year. Is that correct?
I have.
So I know people have probably seen the Adventures in Golf episode, but if they haven't, I feel like you've just got to talk about that event and what it's like to be a part of the summer solstice every year. Because once you get in, you stay in, right?
Unless you get kicked out for some reason, which I don't think has happened.
Okay.
The way it started is it was like invitation only, small group. I think it was maybe 16 people. And at that time, whoever the influencers were, mm-hmm. were part of it. But the point was, I think we've all tried to do like a golf marathon, you know, like play 36, or sometimes folks will do like 100 holes in a day in a golf cart or whatever. But like it's a merry-go-round, right?
Right.
And you're just going around that same course over again. I did 100 holes once on a 9-hole course. By the near end of it, I was like, I got to get out of here. What differentiates that experience from the solstice experience is immense. We were playing 72 holes. We're walking. Some people are taking caddies. I go caddy for the second half because I want to feel like I accomplished something. Mm-hmm. And you're not playing the same hole twice. And you're only playing top 100 courses. And you're doing it in a day. And you're doing it, hopefully, with good buds, because that's where you really got to be selective about who you're spending your day with, because you can play 18 holes with somebody you don't like, but 72 is tough.
Oh, yeah.
I've been lucky to play with some fun people. And then there's this camaraderie aspect, because everybody, the resort's basically shut down, so everybody's doing the same thing. So you're like, hey, dude, what's up? Or like, yeah, man, I forgot my socks, like, because you change socks all the time, and like people will lend people things. It's really cool. And then you have a dinner and a putting contest, and it's probably one of the best put together events I've ever participated in, but it's fun to do it every year.
And tell people about the sock changing after each round. Cause I was surprised when I went to Bandon the first time. They're like, no, you have to change your socks from 118 to the next.
Well, I've learned a lot about footwear, cause we tried to do footwear this past year. And what it is like in golf is actually, you have some of the most demanding needs for a pair of shoes, cause it has to be dry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they seal it up. Well, if you seal it up and you're walking, your feet can't breathe. Most golf shoes don't really breathe. And so your socks get wet, and that's where you get blisters. And you really can't go more than one round walking with the same pair of socks. You can go more than one round with the same pair of shoes. I don't recommend more than 36, but yes, it all comes to socks, and good socks, like nice padded ones. I love Stance. Those are really cool.
Yep.
And they function pretty well too.
Talk to me about the goat caddies. And you guys, I'm pretty sure you made history. First goat caddy?
I know that they've had animals with caddies. So like there's a place, I think, in the mid-Atlantic area that has llamas, I think. But the goat thing was near and dear, because it was a cool little course called Sylvie's Ranch in Oregon that was developing a program where goats could be caddies. And holding all logistical challenges aside, when they called and said, hey, you know, we're thinking about doing a bag, and we keep strapping bags on them because the way the goat is shaped and its height and, you know, just the way it moves, it's not really working to take a normal golf bag and put it on there. And we make golf bags. I don't think we sell a lot of golf bags because we can't make a lot of them anyways, but really it's just a cool little Sunday bag. It was perfect with some changes to be on the goat. So we went through many iterations. We didn't have goats here. We were putting it on our dog. He's pretty big. He's 100 pounds. But Bruce, who we're trying to get it on, Bruce the goat, or Bruce Koepka, or whatever you want to call him, he was 200 pounds. So we went down there. We tested it out, and we made these goat caddies their golf bags.
Yeah, I mean, What a way to make you just play free, just consulting with your goat.
Yeah, it's fun.
What would you say is the biggest surprise now that you're in the industry that you didn't expect when you were trying to break in?
I was inspired by a lot of great brands. At the time, True Linkswear was doing really big things. I think there was, like, Iliac was a company that was cool, and McKenzie was cool, and, you know, these businesses were all constructed totally different than ours. And now when I'm really into it and we get compared to peers like Linksoul and Grayson and Jones and all these big brands, I didn't realize that what we were doing was so different. And the reason was because we didn't take any debt or investment. Mm-hmm. And as a business guy, I now realize how that would have made things a lot easier, but we never did. And I think I have just that much more sense of pride about what we've done because we did it on our own, you know? And I think that those brands are all awesome too, but it's amazing to see how the golf business industry is. It's very businessy. It's like there's an investment group, there's somebody who's really wealthy who's funding a company, or there's something different and there's capital. And the way we've cobbled together our brand has kind of been a fun experiment to see if we can do it on our own and be independent. So that's the surprising thing I've had. Just going to like all these PGA shows, it's like there's brands that come and go, and every time they go, they like, there's like all the investors are there and this and that. So it's like everybody wants to do the golf business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that most of the golf businesses that are mobilized because they have capital, not because they necessarily have money. And the ones that get going and kicking up, it's like, it's interesting. I mean, it's just a different industry, and I think it's a fun hobby for folks, but if they get into it, you know, they kind of have to come at it with the right set of ideas and the right group of people. And the ones that stick around, like the ones that we're mentioning with names, like Linksoul to Jones to True Linkswear, I mean, all these folks you talk about, these companies have great people running them. And that's the thing within the golf industry becomes evident, is nobody in the golf industry sticks around for a long time unless they're great people. And it's been so great to be in this space because it's like very collaborative, and yeah, we all support each other. And I talk to all these guys every week. So it's a pretty cool crew. I mean, whether it's Eric Lang doing cool adventures in golf, it's a great community. And that's despite the fact that I say, like, you know, this, I was going off on this business tangent. It's just like, one thing I learned was that, like, these are all real businesses that have been constructed, and the people running them are great. The ones that are cool, you know?
Yeah. And I was going to ask you if you had any advice for people that are looking, doesn't even have to necessarily be the golf industry, just wanting to start their own business. And maybe it has to do with what you just mentioned with the people and the collaborative nature, but do you have specific advice that you've learned to help someone get their idea off the ground?
It's hard. I mean, there wasn't anybody I could talk to when I first was starting about this head cover project that would just be like, oh yeah, it's a great idea. I mean, I think everybody told me it was a bad idea, whether it was my family to my wife, but you know, I didn't really care because I was doing it for myself and I wanted to have this head cover. And so I was like, whatever, I'm just going to do it. I think the biggest issue is when people set lofty goals. Because then I made my first run, I was like, this is 100 head covers. Well, at least my buddies will have Christmas gifts. That's basically what I figured. If it doesn't work out, I can give them away. And I think just taking a more humble approach to it in the beginning is it lets you fall less or not be so surprised when things don't work out, or just take a, you know, just take a step back. Let's not talk about like, how many golf shops are there? Let's be in 2000. It's like, what do we want to do? Like, I want to do this, 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 and this. All right, let's do that. Let's figure out how to do that and do that for my job.
Yeah.
Let's do that. I think people would have different opinions, but most of these companies that don't work out have too aggressive goals.
You know, it's funny you say that, because that was one of the things I remember most from our first conversation, where I remember I asked you about that, and I remember you saying you weren't really focused on growth. And I thought that that was so refreshing because, you know, I work at a fast-growing startup as my full-time job, and I do this on the side. And, you know, it's looked down upon if you're not having aggressive year-over-year growth targets and all these things. And I just found it really refreshing that you were focused on just creating something that you believed in and knowing that the rest will follow. And I think that's actually indicative in your first goal that you talked about, where you said, all I want to do is I want to be at the Masters. Was it the Masters U.S. Open and Ryder Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you did that, and you knew that that would provide you enough opportunities to maybe do the next thing. Right. And it seemed like you focused very, you had a very narrow focus, which is probably a good learning for a lot of people.
Yeah. I think the focus is good. But you know, I think that starting a business and doing it on your own, if you can get it to go, it's about as good as it gets. It's so cool and it's so fun. And we've met so many great people along the way that, you know, the biggest return has been that, you know, and that wasn't even what I thought it would be. I thought it was just going to be able to have my own schedule and do whatever I want, which actually hasn't been true. Sadly, I don't just hang out and play golf every day. In fact, I end up working every day. But you know what? If it's your passion, it's okay. You know?
So what's the luckiest thing you've gotten to do since starting this?
Oh, man. The coolest thing I've gotten to do. I mean, I think I mentioned it before on the call. And, you know, basically yesterday, and actually for the past couple of team type events, we've been lucky to work with Matt Kuchar. Matt Kuchar emailed us and he said, he emailed my wife from his personal account and said, hey, you know, I want to get some of your head covers. Can I buy them on your website? And my wife's like, hey, this Matt Kuchar guy emailed. He wants to buy head covers. What's this all about? I was like, hold on. Let me, let's get this. Send that email. Let me email him. So then I just emailed with him and he's like, so do I just buy them or what? I was like, dude, you don't have to buy anything. Should we pay you? He's like, no, you don't need to pay me. I'm cool. I'm like, all right. He's like, I just dig your guys' stuff. I got it at a tournament. So we start sending him the head covers and we got into the couple of situations where he qualified for a Ryder Cup. And he's like, I want to make some gifts and give them out to guys. And so we did that at Hazeltine. And then we did it at the President's Cup when it was at Liberty National. And now, yesterday, I don't know the timing of the podcast and stuff like that, but, you know, when this is going to be actually listened to. But he called and he's like, hey, you know, I want to do some head covers for the Ryder Cup this year, since I'm the vice captain, you know, I'd like to give something out. And so yesterday we went, everybody stopped what they were doing. And like, literally, like we were all making head covers and it was so cool. And I don't know if they'll maybe get in the, put into play, you know, but it'll be interesting to see, cause these are probably the coolest head covers we've ever done.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. This will probably be released after the Ryder Cup. So those that listen will probably hopefully see the head covers and then listen to this and understand the backstory. But you guys are probably responsible then for the performance the U.S. team put on at Hazeltine, if that was the first time they got these custom head covers. I mean, that had to have something to do with it.
I think only two or three of the guys used them, but yeah, I would say so.
Okay, well, I like what I hear then, because we're gonna maintain that cup coming back from Europe. So yeah, I like that we're keeping that continuity
ever since Sheamus got involved, you know. We'll just take credit for everybody's victories and no, just kidding.
You guys got the gold touch. All right, I got a couple more questions for you, and then I'll get you out of here. It might be Bandon. It's okay if it is, but I'm curious, the best golf trip / your favorite course?
Preserve at Bandon Jones, the par 3.
Oh, yeah.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but I don't think I've ever left that place more. I mean, I'm always excited and happy and totally stoked on my golf time when I play at the Preserve, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the golf trip, I had a really interesting one recently with my brother, and it wasn't like a traditional golf trip. And I usually hate riding in carts, but it was just riding in carts. And somehow the whole setting overcame that for me. And I went out to Big Island, and I played a couple of cool courses out there. And we planned it in conjunction with, have you heard of the band Iration?
Yeah.
Hawaiian radio rock. Well, one of their band, well, a bunch of their band guys are good buddies, and they're going to be out there playing a couple of shows. So we played golf with them during the day, and then we went to the show in the evening, and we did that for like 2 or 3 days.
Wow.
And I don't know what it is, but I think that one thing that golf trips lack is evening activities outside of just pub sitting, you know?
Yeah.
If you go and you play, say, just imagine what my dream day is: Pacific Dune, Preserve, and then an Iration concert. Tell me how that works. But that golf trip isn't there yet, and someday it'll happen. Someday something like that will happen. We're going to get a cool band to play at some of these Lynx courses and just do it, because that would be the ideal golf trip to me.
Well, you know, Lynxol and at the Goat in Oceanside, they've got that's pretty close, because they always got reggae playing on the range. Always got stuff going on, so they've probably got the closest thing to that. But I love that idea.
Yeah, it's by far. I love the Goat, and how John committed there is total inspiration. And so if and when we have an opportunity to do that in our own backyard, I'm going to be spending a lot of time on the phone with John just asking how the hell he did it, because that thing is just perfect. They got the fire pit, dogs out there.
Oh, yeah.
They got a little kids course. I mean, that's how you get people to play golf.
For sure. So my last question for you is there a difference between simple nostalgia and something nostalgic that also appeals in modern times?
So the latter is like something that's timeless, right?
Yep.
And then the former is something that is just contained within an era. That's a hard one for me.
You know, I was trying to get to the fact that, like, I think what you guys do well is you have the element of nostalgia in what you do based on where the game started, but it also feels really cool today. And I was curious if that's one of the elements that makes your products and your brand.
One of my favorite product designers is Dieter Rams, and he was the lead designer for Braun. And if you look at every Apple product that was made, like in the last 20 years, they've been very inspired by his designs, because if you look at the designs that this guy did in the mid-century, they're like timeless. They're still relevant today, even though the technology under them is so old and useless at this point. Like, you want to put it on your counter and just look at it. I think that, like, what the point you're making is 100% accurate. And I think that, like, because we go about it that way, that, like, our goal would be somebody who doesn't play golf sees our bag and our head covers out on a Lynx course and be like, dude, I want to go play golf. This is cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that your point is very valid.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Akbar, for coming on. Is there anything you want the listeners to look out for from Seamus? I mean, obviously, you guys know where to find them. Just Google and search Seamus Golf, SeamusGolf.com. It's spelled SEAMUS. They also have an awesome Instagram, so give them a follow. But anything you want to give a shout out or things to look out for?
Honestly, we're just staying busy and getting ready for the holidays here. So I think there'll be some exciting stuff in that regard. And, you know, and this year we're having a very big push on junior golf. So you'll be seeing a little bit of that.
Love it. Well, you're going to get an order from me soon. I actually don't have any head cover, so I'm going to get a head cover for myself and maybe the boys here on the par train. And then, yeah, hopefully, like we said when we met about a month ago, if you're in L.A. or next time I'm out in Oregon, let's definitely tee it up.
Please. That would be fun.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Akbar. Enjoy the holidays, okay. And hopefully Kuchar hands out those lucky head covers.
All right, man. Thank you so much.